All right, good morning, everybody. We're going to get started. I have a few announcements I have to go through before we get to the first presenter, so I'm going to start just a few minutes early so I can get through those announcements. So welcome back to ICMC. This morning we are presenting four track sessions, and this is the user experience track. We'll have our first break at 9:40 and a second break at 11:20. Lunch will be served at 12:40. Breaks and lunches will be served in the exhibits area in the Hemingway room. Wi-Fi is available throughout the meeting space. You'll find information on page 3 in your conference program. Conference presentation slides and audio are being posted to the conference website as they are received. Log-on information is on page 3 in your conference program. At 2:50, the conference will end with a plenary panel discussion on FIPS and common criteria, how they play together. This topic was chosen by conference participants. The summary panel discussion is always lively, so please stick around. Your feedback is important to us. Later today, we'll be sending you an email with a link to a survey. Please take a moment to let us know your experience. And if you have any questions or need assistance, please stop by the registration desk or see anyone wearing a staff ribbon. Our first presentation for the user experience is Cryptographic Standards Acceptance and the User Experience. Our presenter is Gordon Bass, and he has served as the Director of Cybersecurity Operations, CISO, CIO, and Director of Systems Engineering in organizations that include Department of Energy, Defense Information Systems Agency, American Red Cross, and AARP, applying business principles to leading organizations' information technology functions and aligning information security requirements with mission goals to optimize effectiveness. Please welcome our keynote speaker for this track, Mr. Gordon Bass.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here. And before I get started talking, I'd just like to know who's in the audience. So, are there end users here? How about, okay, excellent. Are there people from labs here? Okay, and how about vendors? Okay, awesome, because I was hoping to chat with vendors this morning. So if I were to subtitle my presentation, it would be along the lines of how can vendors better help end users, government end users, and customers. That's my perspective because I'm a user of cryptography. I don't create it, although I was a math minor in college. You know, I never really specialized in something like some of you may do. So bear with me a sec while I make this a little more legible on my screen. Okay, great. So I work at Department of Energy now. This is just like a little snapshot of our the agency, 14th largest agency by size. We've got a quarter of a million user accounts, 16,000 plus mobile devices, 300,000 endpoints we manage, close to 108,000 people supporting the enterprise, and quite a few data centers, both at the labs as well as in the federal, supporting the federal organizations within DOE. And right now we have at least 15 federal IT service providers in that organization. So if you think about the Department of Energy mission, you know, safeguarding nuclear fuel and things like that, you can see that we've got an application for cryptography to protect information that's very sensitive in DOE. So DOE has a cyber strategy. I'm not going to talk about it except just to say we have one. If you wanted to look it up, there's a link there where you could see what it is. And it does say how we'll protect our critical assets. And then my particular role at DOE is working in the office of the CIO. I do the assessments and authorizations for the systems used in headquarters organizations. Of course, we do that using the FISMA process, augmented by some of these additional directives and programs from, you know, OMB, from NIST, GSA's FedRAMP program that's headed up by DOD, GSA, and DHS is becoming more and more important because of the interest and move to commercial cloud services. I expect over time we'll be closing some of those data centers that you saw. I don't know that for a fact, but that's just a trend that I've observed in organizations as we move to the cloud and have virtual data centers there. One of the challenges, though, is using commercial cloud, in my experience, creates additional desire for encryption to safeguard the data that's outside our perimeter. So I'm going to jump right into one of the typical user problems that I experience, and that's the one where we're acquiring a new system, and my role is I and my team need to authorize that system. We need to do an assessment, test it, make sure it meets the controls that we have to follow under NIST and under other regulations, and then successfully authorize it. So for me, the challenge often is that the system doesn't meet one or more controls. So I think of controls as customer requirements. You know, they're well known. They're published in all the documentation throughout the federal government. Everybody should know what those customer requirements are if they're selling to government customers. That's my simple way of looking at it. But inevitably, we find a system that we need to authorize, and it's typically a COTS product or maybe a cloud service, doesn't meet all those requirements. And that's the dilemma that I wanted to share with you this morning from my perspective, because there's no easy solution. You know, option one might be to reject that system and say, oh, sorry, it's not compliant. But usually that system, that product, or that cloud service has capabilities that we need. And I know that's not a viable option. Somehow we've, you know, unless it's really, really egregious and we just can't find a way to make it work. So option two is often to acquire the system based on that functionality and then accept that there's going to be some risks associated with it. And what we have to figure out is, can we fix them? How long will it take? What mitigations may need to be implemented? And can we get that residual risk down to a reasonable level that I feel comfortable recommending to my authorizing official? So that dilemma becomes, should we authorize the system or not? That system that's got some kind of, you know, a major gap that's of concern to us. So I'm going to say the answer depends. Is it a deviation from a standard, or is it a deviation from a guideline? And recognize that the difference between standards and guidelines are standards like FIPS are compulsory. That's how I met Jennifer about 6 or 7 months ago, was trying to figure out, give me some advice on what's compulsory, are there ways to waive those standards or not? And then of course we have guidelines, which are SPs, known as the 800 series, and guidelines are recommendations and guidance, but not necessarily compulsory and binding on government agencies. So that leads me to the other possible answer to the dilemma of what do I do with this system that I've got, you know, a system owner that wants to get it authorized. And so part two is recognizing that the authorizing official cannot accept risk and authorize a system that deviates from a standard, but can accept risk that deviates from a guideline, and that's where there's a window within which the authorizing official can exercise his or her judgment. So the example I wanted to use, given who we are here at this conference, was encryption. So what I've learned in doing assessments and authorizations is that we have to follow guidance from NIST and standards from NIST. And what we're allowed to decide is whether to encrypt or not. That decision rests with the system owner, and they decide based on the sensitivity of that information to encrypt or not encrypt. However, if the decision is made to encrypt it, then they're obligated to use standards that are approved. And what are those standards? Of course, it's either FIPS 140-2 or NSA cryptography. So that to me sounds pretty simple. So I've got a slide here, just kind of a couple notes on the use of unvalidated cryptography. This was something that was really interesting to me when I found this information on NIST's website. And it's the notion that, again, unvalidated cryptography is considered no better than clear text. Pragmatically, maybe that's not true, but from a strict compliance standard, that's the way it's viewed. And, you know, compliance is important. Compliance is only compliance, but it's still part of the overall equation for securing our government systems and establishing that they're secure and successfully getting through IG audits and other independent audits. So we've simply got to do these things the way they're defined and the way we're directed to do it. I had heard that it was possible to get a waiver in certain circumstances, and that was true at a certain point in time, but that was only up until 2002, and since then we're not allowed to seek waivers from FIPS. So to me that was interesting. When I educated my authorizing official and my CIO on that, that actually was a relief to them to learn that they really didn't have to struggle with some difficult decisions on whether to use a product that there seemed to be a lot of demand for, once they realized they had the support of these FIPS and the guidance from NIST and understood the facts related to that. Okay, so that led to what I'm calling our current Office of the CIO's approach to authorizations. It's real simple. Consider all the guidance and follow all the standards. Is it truly that simple? Well, maybe not always, but if we can achieve that, that's a great thing. And when we do that, what are the benefits? Well, number one, we achieve the security goals indicated by the controls. Secondly, we're compliant with FISMA. Third, we avoid the need for potential mitigations. Mitigations are never free. They take time, they take money maybe, they take effort. There might be POAMs associated with short-term use of a mitigation, and then later on, maybe upgrading a product or hoping a vendor will upgrade a product that we can implement and then eliminate the need for some of the mitigations. My experience with mitigations is a lot of times there's hardware and software costs, licensing, or maybe it's like extra due diligence, implementing a new process, a job aid, an SOP, or something that allows us to work around an issue. I think something that would be important to vendors as well as me as an end user is the fact that if a product is compliant, I can achieve an authorization a lot quicker. That means a vendor can get the product in the door, get paid, have a happy customer sooner, right? And in my experience with FedRAMP, which I used to serve on as one of the team members, and along with my other experience in the federal government, I've realized there are more and more vendors that are taking the effort, and I admire the effort they take to comply with these standards, including FIPS 140-2. And so I feel every time we use one of their products, we're rewarding that vendor, and that's a good thing. So the way I look at this is government needs versus industry needs. And what we need in government are commercial solutions that are cost-effective, easy to acquire, easy to secure, very important, like I was just saying, easy to assess and authorize, and then easy to implement. And I have worked in industry, and what we always wanted in industry were satisfied customers that would continue to acquire our commercial products and services. Without that, where are we? So in conclusion, to me, this is the great win-win, is government and industry's needs are both met when we've got compliance. As a government person, I can't force compliance, but I can say why it would be helpful to me and why I think it would help industry. And so if some of you folks from industry here are complying with FIPS 140-2 in particular, I just want to say thank you. That makes my job a whole lot easier. And if there are some of you that aren't, hopefully the fact that you're here might indicate you're interested in doing that. And so my question I would leave you with is, you know, can you do that? And if so, how soon? So that's my presentation. It was simple and to the point, I hope. If you have any questions, I'd be delighted to take them. Yes, sir. Really?
Yeah, hi, I'm Bill Shelton from Juniper Networks. And the fundamentally my question is, with the kind of the view that if a product isn't validated, it's essentially clear text, plain text, and how that works in the end user community, because what we have seen with some of our government customers is that they will, because it takes like a year to get a product FIPS certified, and the reality is that's about how much time it takes, is that we've seen customers do something that we think is very bad behavior, that they will take a crypto module or product that is FIPS certified, and they will operate that version of code even when there's disclosed security vulnerabilities. And so I'm curious how the Department of Energy addresses that situation, because we at Juniper think that's very bad and dangerous behavior. And that what, as industry and the government, what we need to work on is a process to streamline that, or take a risk-based approach which would say, yes, maybe I can take that module and move forward, address, patch it with the address vulnerabilities and move forward, even though I'm now in tension with the policy, which would say, look, I've altered the module. So, you know, where do I sit between those two things? So I'd be interested in how you guys think that.
So I think that's a great question. And what I really liked was, you know, you touched on the notion of risk-based decision. And I think ultimately that's always the smart thing to do, is make the best decision based on our understanding of the risk. If that doesn't comply with a standard, that creates a headache though, and how do we finesse that, and how would we document it and move forward? So that becomes a challenge. And I'm not going to speak specifically about DOE, but I will recognize that what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I do believe pragmatically that some encryption, even if it's not FIPS validated, is better than no encryption. You know, maybe it'll slow someone down. Does it slow them down for a year, or for, does it slow a bad person trying to get my data down for a year or for a day or for 10 minutes? I don't know, but I know it's more than clear text. I'm sorry the slides didn't advance. I don't know if that was my ineptitude or not, but I know I could see them here. Are there any other questions? Yes, sir.
With DOE, what do you see as your biggest challenge implementing cryptography beyond just standards?
So one that comes to mind, because I was talking with someone in Department of Energy yesterday about it, was the fact that a certain product we're using does have the option to turn on the FIPS 140-2 validated cryptography. But the problem is when we turn it on, the performance goes really, really bad. And so do we want to be compliant, or do we want to be able to do work? And so that's a big challenge. You're welcome. Looks like there might be one more question.
So I'm an old guy, so I think of the old things. And one of the things that was really big was defense in depth, right? Having multiple layers and stuff like that. So one of the questions I have is, in today's environment, do you find it even possible to rearrange your systems when you find a vulnerability to mitigate that vulnerability while still maintaining certification or valid equipment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it also touches on being able to make risk-based decisions. So when we understand we've got a vulnerability and we're, you know, we either patch it immediately and it's gone, or we realize there is no immediate solution. And then we have to say, well, what are our options? One is to turn the system off. That's usually not a viable option, but it could happen in a dire circumstance where, you know, like with WannaCry, that definitely would have been one of the options that we would consider and are considering. We've shut some systems down in the last few days. You know, I will say in the main, all our protections protected us from that, but so it's a matter of just evaluating the options and choosing the less bad one. Thank you. I sense my time is up, so thank you.